Everybody, welcome again to the Roll Bama Roll podcast previews. This week we're going to be talking about that team we all love to hate, the Tennessee Volunteers. On with me today is Joel Hollingsworth of Rocky Top Talk, one of our Sports Blog Nation fellow bloggers. He was good enough to join us for this and also to write a chapter for Yale, Alabama. So even if he does root for the Vols, we like him a lot. Joel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
All right, let's get started. Now, obviously the biggest question for Tennessee, you lose a four-year starter like Eric Ainge, being replaced with Jonathan Crompton, and not only are you losing a quarterback, the offensive coordinator that everyone seemed to give a lot of credit to Ainge's tremendous turnaround last year has also gone to Coach Duke as well, and you have a new offensive coordinator. Can you tell us a little bit about what sort of offensive shifts we can see from the Cutcliffe era to the new Clawson era?
Actually, nobody knows, and that's the coolest thing about it. It's like we got a great big giant gift under the Christmas tree. Nobody knows what's in it, but we think it's going to be good. So, you know, I'm not all that scared about having to replace Ainge with Crompton. Ainge was solid. He was really good. He was trained very well by Cutcliffe. The best thing Cutcliffe did for him, though, was to coach him to get rid of it, throw it into the river once it counted to three and nobody was open. So that actually explains that and the good offensive line. That explains the, I think it was four total sacks last year. Crompton is going to be different. Crompton, he was ranked coming out of high school a lot higher than Eric Ainge was. So he's got, I think, more upside than Ainge had. I think he was second behind Sanchez with USC. So he's really good, or really talented anyway, and it's just a matter of experience for him. So he's been in the program for several years now, a couple of years at least, and I think he's going to be ready. Now, he's also got a lot of chemistry with the players, I think, that you didn't necessarily see with Ainge. So that's going to help too. Now, with Clawson, the new offensive coordinator, you know, again, we don't really know. It's a little hard to find a video on the Richmond Spiders. But he's got a good record. Fulmer likes him a lot, you know, whatever that's worth. I think he's going to be really good just from what I'm hearing. Now, the offense, you know, we're calling it the Clawfense in hopes that it's actually going to be something worthy of a nickname. But I think it is. And he's doing a lot of different unique things. Such as what we're calling the incredible flipping O-line, which is, I guess, it's novel for this kind of, or this stage of football. But I guess it's used in D2 or 1AA, whatever it is, high school, a whole bunch of stuff. What they do is they, instead of having a right guard, left guard, right tackle, left tackle, excuse me, they have a just tackles and guards, and then they switch sides depending on, again, something. We don't really know. Sometimes it's been described as weak side, strong side. Sometimes it's quick side, and I guess the other is slow side, and or short side, long side, meaning which hash mark you're on. So I don't know exactly what all it entails, but it's designed to actually set up mismatches in the trenches too. You know, most teams will try to set up mismatches with their guy, with their skill players, you know, get a quick guy or a tight end on a linebacker or something. But we're doing it actually on the line. That's one thing that's going to be different, and we're sure that that's going to be different. And the thing that is exciting about it being different is that predictability is basically the second leading cause of death of offenses. And for Tennessee, it's been the first leading cause of death. Everybody knows what we were going to do over the past 12, 15 years. This year, nobody knows. And we should have even better talent than we had last year. So combine those two things, I think we're going to be good. I'm hopeful anyway. We'll have to come up with a different nickname if it turns out to, you know, completely flop. I'm sure you guys can help me with that, right?
We can help you, definitely. I know third Saturday in Blocktober came up with the Claw Shucks offense if in case things go bad. Speaking of the offensive line, that'll work. Speaking of the offensive line, that's I had not read about that shifting around. That's a very interesting approach. It'll be interesting to see how that works out. Tell us a little bit about the offensive line. It looks like you got 4 out of 5 starters with a it looks like replacing the right guard, though. He's had some starting experience in the past. Is this going to be that continued strength of the Tennessee offense that we all kind of have feared for years?
Well, I hope it's one that you fear. I'm not sure that we've really been all that fearsome lately. Our tradition is that we were big and strong, and we would push you off the ball, and we would run down your throats, and we would pick up the line of scrimmage and move it 4 yards down the field. Several years ago, though, for some inexplicable reason, we hired Jimmy Ray Stevens from Florida as our offensive line coach. And I point to that as being sort of the demise of our running game. We sort of turned into a pass blocking and more passing offense. And he's been gone for several years, and I think he was fired after the season of which we do not speak. And since then, we have actually been getting better. And I think with Clawson and with these guys having 4 years of actually refocusing on the run, I think they're going to be really good. I mean, this Jock McClendon guy, he's like the strongest guy, you know, in the world or something. He bench pressed, I calculated it out to be 1.433 Mark Mangino's. I think that's about 650 pounds or so, something like that. So he's a strong dude, and he can also get down the field too. He saved the South Carolina game for us. I think it was South Carolina last year when Arian Foster gained a first down by fumbling the ball 20 yards up the field, and McClendon was the one that actually recovered it. So he's not only big and strong, he's quick. And then we got Anthony Parker, who's getting a lot of preseason publicity. Josh McNeil is his third year at center. He's a mean, tough, nasty dude who's smart. We're looking forward to the offensive line, especially with the new offense and the inexperienced quarterback and the experienced Arian Foster running behind him, along with a whole stable of solid depth behind him. I think our running game actually should be like it used to be this year.
All right, since you brought up the running game, is what I was going to ask you next. With that offensive line, with guys like Arian Foster and Montario Hardesty and even Lennon Creer in the backfield, all three very capable backs, is there a possibility that Tennessee could go back to that sort of 3 yards in a cloud of dust just to kind of, I guess, grind out games, or is there going to be a commitment to sticking with this kind of new spread offense that Clawson is supposed to be installing?
Well, you know, I don't know. I think you're going to see a lot of running. My co-author is actually working up a post for this week that is going to show what Clawson's tendencies, sort of the split between running and passing, has been, and he's going to compare it to what Tennessee has actually been over the past several years. I think, based on the preliminary numbers I've seen, that you're going to see more running than passing. Now, you know, there's several different kinds of run games, whether it's the 3, hopefully 0.4 yards in a cloud of dust, or whether you actually, you know, get it to the running backs out in space. I don't know. If I had to guess, I think we're probably talking about space more than moving the wall down the field.
All right. Well, let's switch over and talk about the defense then. It looks like you got 6 returning starters on defense, 7 really if you want to count Demetrius Morley, who started in 06 and had to sit out last year as I believe it was academic issues. Up front, both defensive ends are gone, but you have 2 returning defensive tackles, while Rico McCoy returns at outside linebacker, but the other outside and middle positions are going to have to be replaced. Is that a worry about stopping the run, or should the young guys be able to step in and fill those roles fairly easily?
I think it's a real concern. That is the weak point, or basically the biggest question mark right now. We should be better than we were last year, but frankly, we weren't very good last year. With DeMonte Bolden and Dan Williams in the middle, They were okay, and they got better as the year went on last year. And now we have, what's his name, Walter Fisher, who's a JUCO guy, I think, in his second year with Tennessee. And he's sort of worked himself into that rotation. So we have three solid ones now with a little bit of depth behind them. The ends, I think, are going to be very good. There's not a lot of preseason hype about Wes Brown, but the team, every time you ask somebody on the team about him, they're just oohing and aahing about the guy. So you might hear him make some noise. Robert Ayers is a guy who sort of got off to a rocky start when he got on campus, but has really matured. He's going to be a solid player at end for us this year. Rico McCoy, yes, is solid at linebacker. Now, here's the thing you might not have heard if you haven't been paying attention over the past week or two. Gerald Williams, who is like a four-star, five-star guy, he was basically, I just finished ranking him number one in our class this year. He has been trying to get to Tennessee for what seems like a decade. He tried, he got out, he came to campus, he practiced for a couple of practices, and then he got booted for academics. He went back and took his test, and then they didn't like that result, even though it was a good score. Anyway, the guy has bounced all over the place, and he's finally on campus and really doing well. So if he plays, and I say if because what's happened the last couple of days is he hasn't been practicing as much as normal, and that sort of indicates that maybe he might have an eligibility issue. The last thing he had to clear up was a summer class, and it looked like it was going to be fine, but we don't really know. But if he plays, our linebacking corps is going to be just fine because he's fantastic. And I don't know if your next question is about the secondary or not. I guess you didn't bring them up, so they're sort of a topic unto themselves. So I won't mention them right now, but if you're not going to ask me about them, I'll tell you about them later because that's the strength of our entire
team. We'll get to them later.
All right.
Okay, before we talk about the secondary, though, I just have to ask a personal opinion question for you. Is Rico McCoy the sexiest name in the SEC?
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's almost too close to Rico Suave, you know, wasn't that an old,
but that's what makes it,
you know, white, well, I don't know, do you consider that sexy? Did you see that video?
Do.
Okay, well, that just confirms everything I thought about Alabama fans.
Well, I'm glad I can help you with that. Every time I see his name, I think that somebody has got to do, like, an imaginary guest column with Rico McCoy as just the pimpinest thing ever. But anyway, that's just my interjection of pure personal opinion. Now we can talk about the secondary. It looks like both cornerbacks are returning, D'Angelo Willingham and Brent Vinson. Vinson played as a true freshman last year, but steps in as a sophomore. I believe he played most of the season as a starter and saw a lot of time. Eric Berry is the name that most people are going to instantly say when they think about the Tennessee defense. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe you had a post that he's going to be lining up at quarterback and kind of a, I guess, wild hog or wild row, whatever it is, sort of formation this year. Do you see that as something that the offense can really use, or is it just kind of a gimmick thing?
I think right now with Berry, it's not necessarily gimmick, but it's more Fulmer making good on a recruiting promise. I think you might see it a little bit here and there. I think you would see it a lot more if we didn't already have that with Gerald Williams, who ran it several times last year with great effect. And we're going to see that a lot more this year. It's not like you're going to see it as much as McFadden ran it at Arkansas, but the G-gun, as they call it around here, you're going to see that a lot. And Gerald Williams is Gerald Jones is the guy who runs that. He's fantastic at it. Now, what I would love to see, and I hope that Clawson's thinking about this, I would love to see Gerald Jones and Eric Berry back there, because then you have basically something like Slayton and White at West Virginia. You got two really fast guys that can go in either direction, and nobody knows until they're gone. So I would love to see that. But The rest of the secondary, though, you mentioned Brent Vincent. Again, word is that he might have some academic problems, too. It's weird because he was fantastic last year, even playing hurt with a shoulder that would dislocate even when he rolled over in bed. He was great, but he's been practicing with the second and third team most of preseason, and so that's raised some eyebrows. The team has not officially come out and said that he's got any problems, but they have said that he's the best athlete on the team, and that's Eric Berry and Gerald Jones included. So if he's that good, I don't know why he wouldn't, and he had the experience from last year, I don't know why he wouldn't be practicing with the first team. And he got in a fight with a player on, I think it was Thursday's scrimmage, where he just pummeled the guy, apparently. I think it was Josh Briscoe he got after. And Briscoe is actually a Taekwondo guy, from what I understand. And he dominated him under control in a couple of seconds. So the guy's a fantastic athlete, but he may be feeling some frustration about not being able to get into the first team or his academics or whatever. But if he does play, he's going to be great. If he doesn't play, I think we're still going to be fine because we've got a lot of depth at cornerback, including Dennis Rogan, who's sort of a short guy, but he's a big-time playmaker. You might remember him from some punt returns last year.
All right. Well, let's take a look at the schedule here while we still got you. Opening at UCLA. Tennessee and the Pac-10 have had some scheduling the past few years. I know had a series with Cal. Is this something that they're trying to string together for recruiting purposes, or did it just kind of happen to fall that way?
I think it's a combination of things. We always schedule some big-time program. Of course, it's always 6 years in advance, so you're sort of guessing about who's going to be good at the time. But, you know, we play Miami. We play Notre Dame. We scheduled Cal. I think we got Nebraska on the schedule. Maybe they'll be good in 10 years when we play them. I don't know. Possible, I guess. But we sort of always do that. Because Tennessee is not like Florida or even some of the even more southern states like Louisiana or whatever, we don't really have as much talent in Tennessee to recruit from. So we do like to go all over the place to get fans from all over the nation and get interest and develop relationships with high school coaches and stuff. So I think that's part of the thing. But, you know, the fact that it's been the Pac-10, we have had some success with some players out there in California, so maybe that had something to do with it as well. Some success, you know, I mean, we had Casey Clausen, Ainge was from out in Oregon. We've had some other skill players from out there that have done well. We get a lot of JUCO guys from out there, too, so maybe that's part of it.
All right, well, after UCLA at the bye week, then you played the UAB Blazers, who is a team kind of close to my own heart, being here from Birmingham. Then you have to – or not go face Florida. Florida comes to Knoxville. Is that two games in an off week before getting into a pretty brutal stretch of welcoming Florida, then going to Auburn, Northern Illinois, then at Georgia? Is that something that concerns you about really being able to prepare the team against – a UCLA team that doesn't have a quarterback that can stand upright at the moment, and then a bye week, and then UAB, which it might pay me to say it, but is one of the worst teams in the country right now. Is that something that kind of concerns you?
That stretch, no matter where it fell, would be a cause for concern. That it's early is particularly a cause of concern for a couple of reasons. One, we got that new offense and the new inexperienced quarterback. And two, we generally, it takes us some time to find ourselves, and we generally do better at the end of the season than we do at the beginning. But that's maybe just because we always play Florida in the beginning, so I don't really know. But, and, Alabama-Birmingham may be one of the worst teams in Division I, but they do have one of the coolest logos, so you have that going for you.
I'm glad somebody else likes the Dragon.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. UCLA, you know, like you said, their quarterbacks tend to be like Spinal Tap drummers, you know. They just can't keep one. they die from their own vomit or, you know, a bizarre gardening accident or something. But I think it's going to be good for us to go out there and be able to try to work some of the kinks out. And then we have basically, you know, no offense to Alabama Birmingham, but we basically have almost 3 weeks before Florida then. So we got 2 weeks to watch Florida. And this year, Florida's doing something different than they normally do, sort of. Usually they play a couple of, Alabama Birmingham's or somebody like that. And this year they're playing, I think, Hawaii and Miami early. So we're going to get to see them against some you know, real in quotes. I know we got some questions about Hawaii, but we get to see them actually play some halfway decent teams this year. So we might be able to actually, you know, save some of our game plan against UCLA and UAB and yet still work out some of the kinks and really focus on winning that turning point game, because it always is. When, if you lose to Florida, the season is, you know, like, here we go again. And, you know, if we win, then we're in pretty good shape for the rest of the season. Of course, we still got Auburn, who we seem to never be able to beat. We still got Georgia. I think Georgia is overrated. I'm on record as having said that, but I'm scared to death of them because I'm thinking they're overrated, which is sort of bizarre logic there, but they're going to be highly motivated too. So, and we're playing there. So I don't know. That stretch, that's a killer stretch. It's basically our season, but it usually is. You know, we play those really tough games early and then we sort of, it's all downhill from there. But don't tell that to Steve Spurrier.
I won't. I was going to say, in the downhill stretch here, you got Mississippi State and Alabama, both in Knoxville, then at South Carolina, Wyoming's in Knoxville, a bye week, then at Vandy in Kentucky. That is a fairly easy stretch. I know Alabama, depending on who you ask, we're either a dark horse contender for the West or probably only going to win 7 games because of all the freshmen. And then you have South Carolina that just has been really one of the most inconsistently talented teams out there. Should that be, you know, a pretty good stretch there to really build a good run into the end of the season for y'all?
Yeah, I think so. You know, if we get past South Carolina in the lead, then we're going to be in really good shape. We shouldn't have any problem with Wyoming. I mean, it wouldn't matter anyway. Really, it's all about the SEC. We generally can beat Vanderbilt, except in 2005. Kentucky played us really tough last year, but I just don't see it happening again this year. So we basically have a three-tiered season. We got that Florida, Auburn, Georgia chunk, and then we have Mississippi State, who's going to be tough. Alabama, always tough. South Carolina always seems to come within an overtime of beating us somehow. So, you know, again, it's sort of a I don't know. I don't lift weights, but is that how you lift weights? You start with a really tough series. What is it called? A set. And then you have sort of another weaker set, and then you finish with a lighter set. I don't know.
I don't lift weights either. I can tell you.
I sit on my futon, but I get no injuries that way, so you know, that's good.
Well, bloggers aren't known for exercising. We're known for sitting in our parents' basements and blogging. So I guess we shouldn't know those kind of questions or know those kind of answers to those kind of questions.
Right.
All right, finishing up, let's see here. Do we think we can? Do you think you guys can match last year's 10-win total with this schedule?
Boy, I don't know. I haven't looked at it. I think UCLA, yes. UAB, that's 2. Northern Illinois, that's 3. Miami, 4. Vanderbilt, 5. Kentucky, 6. And then of the Mississippi State, Alabama, South Carolina tier, get a couple of those, 7-8, and get a couple. Florida, Auburn, and Georgia. Yeah, I think we can. Of course, you know, again, it's a complete and total guess because we have no idea what our offense is going to look like. Could be the Claw Pants or it could be the Claw Chucks.
All right. Well, there you have it. Maybe 10 wins, but we just don't know because of the new offense. So, Joel, thanks so much for joining us to break down the Tennessee Volunteers. Good luck this season, except for one weekend in October. And we'll be talking to you again during the season.
All right. Thanks again, Todd. Appreciate it.